CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com on a Monday morning. Rain everywhere, and I thought I'd play the storm. Well, good luck. I saw them on stage on Saturday. Just fantastic. Love these guys. All right, so much to get into. Leanne Moll, who has the most interesting life in the world, even though she didn't ask for it. She had 18 hours of load shedding and powerlessness over the weekend. What happened to you? A pole across the road from you caught fire.
Well, I had load shedding from 4 p.m. to 8:30. And at that point, the lights came on. Then they flickered for about 30 minutes. They were just, my washing machine was flickering. Everything was going crazy. Then I heard someone outside going, "Call the fire brigade." And lo and behold, there was a lamppost that had caught fire and was right next to a tree, so it was a bit of a hazard. That put us out for the rest of the time in between the next load shedding schedule. So there were 18 hours of no power.
How do you end up with all the drama?
I don't know, it just happens. I'm used to it by now, you know?
All right, very good. Well, let's get stuck into some things.
Yes. Did you hear about the banana that was a piece of art?
Is that a trick question?
It's an actual thing. So at Art Basel this year.
That's the famous art sale auction where all the collectors from all over the world go to see what's new.
Correct. So it was in New York. There was a banana duct taped with that gray shitty duct tape against the wall.
Yeah.
And that sold for $120,000.
You see, the person who bought that... That person has too much money, and God alone knows. This just proves you don't have to be clever to be rich, and a lot of rich people are not clever.
It was sold to a French art collector. Okay, now this is an actual real banana, all right?
Mm-hmm. So who was it? Was it François Pinault? Because he's the guy who owns the LMV, you know, Louis Vuitton and all of that stuff. And he's a big art collector. He has a massive gallery in Venice, which I've been to.
I don't have his name. I have the gallery owner's name, Perrotin.
Okay, no, don't worry then. I mean, look, whoever this person is, they should be institutionalized.
So the banana art was titled Comedian.
Oh,
it was the work of an Italian artist, Maurizio Cattelan.
That guy's a genius, by the way. You duct tape a banana to something, and people will buy it for how many millions of dollars?
$120,000.
Stupid morons.
Well, it's on tape.
Yeah.
I sound very old saying that.
It's on tape.
Somebody put it on the tape.
Yeah.
A man walked up to it and ate it.
Oh, you are joking. So it's gone.
And he filmed himself, and it's called The Hungry Artist. So, yes, this man, David Datuna, went to the museum, peeled it off the wall, opened up the banana, and ate it. Apparently, a dismayed partner at the Perrotin Gallery, Peggy LeBeouf, ran over shouting, "But you are not supposed to touch the art."
All right, I'm sorry. It just makes the art community uncomfortable, but you're all a bunch of idiots. This just shows you.
The director of museum relations, Lucien Terras, said that the work is still salvageable.
Yes.
Because it came with a certificate of authenticity and a disclaimer that owners may replace the banana as needed.
Oh, please. Do me a favor. What the hell?
I mean, come on.
Dummies. Well, there we go. You wanted to know how the art world works. There's one story that'll tell you everything you need to know.
This is the same artist who is behind the anti-Trump gold toilet.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's a pretty funny guy, actually.
That gold toilet was stolen from Blenheim Palace in Oxfordshire. Someone broke in and stole, and it was plumbed in. It was, you could actually use that solid gold toilet.
Yes, it was 18 karat gold, named America.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
What idiots. All right, good work. Congratulations. I was talking to a friend of mine over the weekend about this. It's amazing how all the design and art, and we're going to talk to John Flismus just now. I want to hear his opinion on this. But all these people who talk about advertising and art and design, and they have these awards, and they have these rankings, and people publish books on how brilliant all of this is. So much of it is just hype and nonsense, though. Mm.
And completely.
I cannot believe what people are willing to pay for. Just for the right to say that they bought something that was hyped up, that was trendy, that some artist had conceived of, no matter how stupid it looked.
Mm.
It's just madness.
Well, speaking of expensive pieces of art,
yes.
The crown that Miss Universe, who is Miss South Africa.
Yes, by the way, congratulations to her. Can I quickly play for you
the
moment of her crowning?
Ooh, yes, please.
This is always nice to hear, and it always makes people happy. So here it is, the new Miss Universe, so the big announcement. And by the way, Steve Harvey didn't screw it up, which is excellent news. I mean, we all like it when it works, and Steve Harvey doesn't screw it up.
Congratulations, Mexico. Mm-hmm. Now we are down to South Africa and Puerto Rico.
Wow. Take it away.
Only one of you can be crowned our new Miss Universe.
I love this when they make you wait, and there's some director in the ear of the presenter going, okay, hold it some more. Hold it some more. We've got the music coming. I'll tell you when. And he's going, okay, all right, this is very good.
If for any reason the winner
is unable
to fulfill her duties, the first runner-up...
Because who the hell's going to cut all those ribbons and appear in all those dresses?
...will take her place.
Yeah.
Good luck to you both.
Yeah. Hold just a little longer, Steve.
The new Miss Universe is...
Take a break. And sorry, I don't know what happened there. Hang on, we missed the moment.
Damn it.
We built up the. You see, this is how disappointing
it would
be.
Good luck to you both.
All right, yeah, we've got to listen to it again. Take a break.
The new
right.
Miss Universe is
and go. Oh, for God's sake!
This is sabotage.
I'm telling you, this is sabotage.
What the fuck?
I don't know. Maybe it was too much tension for the internet to handle.
Jeez.
It's Miss South Africa.
Yes, congratulations to Zizi Bini, who was in here just a couple of weeks ago.
She's the coolest.
I didn't even send those cows, Gareth. I feel so terrible right now.
You didn't send her cows?
Yeah.
And you could have.
That's what I wanted to do.
Oh.
She was she was mildly amused by Gareth. I wouldn't say she was thinking about him, but here we are. So listen to this quickly. This is Zizi Bini as she did her little walk. And this is on Telemundo in Spanish. So obviously not the ratings puller that it once was, but good for us. And here she is at the microphone.
I grew up in a world where a woman who looks like me, with my kind of skin and my kind of hair, was never considered to be beautiful. And I think that it is time that that stops today.
Now, that's a lie, by the way. She's hot no matter where she was born or what color she is. That's absolute nonsense. She's playing on the victim thing here, but I think she is gorgeous. So I maybe I just don't fit in. Maybe we're in that together.
Stops today. I want children to look at me and see my face, and I want them to see their faces reflected in mine. Mm. Thank you.
All right. That's what she said before. So what about her and what about this story that you picked up on? Do we need to know?
She got to wear the brand new Power of Unity crown.
Oh.
Which is said to be worth 73 million rand.
Jesus.
73 mil.
Does she get to keep it?
No.
Oh.
She just gets to wear it, and then it goes on to the next Miss Universe.
All right.
So she's taken over the title from Miss Universe 2018, Catriona Gray.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next Miss Universe, she'll hand over the 73 million rand crown to her.
Wow.
Demi Lee, was she not Miss Universe?
That's right. The first was Margaret Gardner, who's Miss South Africa, in 1978. My name is Margaret Gardner. That's how she spoke. I had her book. I had a book on how to...
How did she say it?
My name is Margaret Gardner. followed by Demi Lee Nell Peters in 2017.
Double barrel name and surname.
Yes.
So good she has to have two of each.
Yeah. Margaret Gardner was my favorite, though. So her book was all about how to do your nails, how to get ready before you go out.
Okay.
Mm.
Very nice. All right, very I've cool. got a story for us. This is quite fun, and Bulelo might want to mention something about this too. But Faf du Plessis was commenting about his sister marrying a teammate, a guy called Hardus Viljoen.
Hardus,
yeah. So first of all, yeah. So here's Faf talking about it. This is quite funny. He said Hardus is not playing today because he's lying in bed with my sister. This is Faf. Listen.
That's the outcome. We can't control it as of yet. We got to play well today. Obviously, these guys are top of the log for a reason. But we're looking forward to today.
Any changes today?
One change. Hardus Viljoen is not playing. He's lying in bed with my sister. They got married yesterday.
All right.
Brilliant. That's been all the best.
All right, clearly the interviewer was not comfortable with handling this. Not his finest moment.
Well, he was clearly not pleased either about the whole thing.
No, he panicked so hard, that commentator. He couldn't believe that someone could say something like so salacious on television.
Ooh, very exciting.
Oh, married people in a bed together.
All right, so let's just talk about cricket South Africa, because you brought up this story last week, and it's not getting any better for them. What's happening at CSA?
Oh, it's gotten... Everyone thought we'd hit rock bottom, right, Gareth?
Mm-hmm. And we kept on digging.
No. We can always get worse. Because Thabang Moora got suspended last week, the CEO. But the board refused to quit. And the biggest loser in the bunch of losers, Nenzani, says, I refuse to quit. We've got the support of the rest of the board and basically South Africa. Two of the board members quit this week. What do you mean you've got the support members?
The bunch of losers.
Officially. So, I mean, Iqbal Khan, Shirley Zinn quitting last week, in and amongst a couple of things that have been thrown at the CEO, Thabang Moora, is corporate governance concerns, massive corporate abuse of the credit card. Listen, SA Cricket is now going to fold, Gareth. SAA and SA Cricket are going the same way. They lost Standard Bank. Last week, Standard Bank came out and said, we are out. It is official.
We're not giving you money to steal.
No. We got better things to do. We're trying to get into big business with big people. They're out. Now, the interesting part is the Willerton Group, which are actually really putting big bucks into it, they've now said, if Nenzani does not go, well, we are out. They have said, they have declared, if he doesn't resign, so there's another sponsor gone. Wow. SA Cricket is about to fold, Gareth.
Wow. What will happen then? Will we not ever see cricket again, or will people go back to playing on school fields? How's it going to work?
We'll probably become like the West Indies, and just like you'll have to hope the rich players that play overseas will pay for the guys' air flights or something. It's
That's
ridiculous.
Terrible.
Yeah, no, it's listen, we're not too far off being like the West Indies or Bangladesh or these guys. We're being run like a spaza shop.
Wow. All right, let's do a little bit of sport while you're onto it. How about Man United beating Man City?
Oh, Manchester Derby. I tell you what, it was a horrible weekend for anybody with a human soul. Man United are up to the dizzying heights of fifth place. Martial and Rashford put United 2 up. Otamendi pulled one back in the 85th minute, but it was all too little too late, and it looks like the champions Manchester City are out of the title race.
All right, and then Blitzbocker in Dubai, let's talk about them.
Gareth, tell me, what is your best situation you could ever imagine in life? Have you ever thought about it? Or I can give you some time to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of things that I think are the best situation. I had a great weekend for a start. my expectations are low.
All right, well.
Chocolate fountain would be good.
A chocolate fountain.
Leanne wants a chocolate fountain. Google, what would you like? Best possible scenario for you.
I just want a supercar.
Oh, you want a supercar.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll tell you who's living the best scenario right now is the Blitzbocker. I mean, essentially, they've got Scarlett Johansson as a wife and Mila Kunis as a concubine.
Sure.
Because we have got the two best players in Sevens rugby going right now. Siyabela Sunatla, Spec Magic, Roscoe Speckman. They delivered in Dubai and we won the Sevens. And we beat the All Blacks 15-0 in the final. It is one of the most remarkable performances I have ever seen. If you haven't seen that, it's been sensational. Check the highlights. Roscoe Speckman, I tell you, Gareth, sensational. They're in Cape Town next week, guys, so let's back the Bocca.
Fantastic. All right, thank you very much. There's some
polar opposite to the cricket.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right, what else is going on?
Oh, well, speaking about Trump's golden toilet... He's been on something about flushing. Americans have to flush the toilet 10 times or 15 times as opposed to once. He was at a roundtable discussion and apparently went on this complete tangent about toilets and water flow. No one has any clue about what he was speaking about. Not entirely clear.
Is he... This guy...
He's lost.
You remember Covfefe? Where he misspelled coffee and then it turned into a whole
thing. Yes.
Now, there are two camps of people. There are people who say Donald Trump is just a complete idiot and he bumbles and stumbles and falls down and he's just not smart enough. And sometimes when he's typing at 3 a.m. when he's on the loo, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And then there's another group of people who genuinely believe that he is playing 4D chess, that he is an absolute genius, and he's figured out how to manipulate people through social media, and it's all part of some big plan. And I know people who actually think this. They really genuinely believe Donald Trump is some sort of savant.
Like Kaiser Sose.
Right, and he's discovered a way to make everything go in a certain direction, and that's his whole purpose.
Maybe those people can help decipher the following.
Well, I wouldn't hold my breath, but all right, go.
He says, Americans are flushing their toilets 10 times, 15 times, as opposed to once, and argue that they're having difficulty with washing their hands in what appeared to be a tangent about low-flow sinks and toilets. He said, we have a situation where we're looking at very strongly at sinks and showers and other elements of bathrooms where you turn the faucet on. And in areas where there's tremendous amounts of water, where the water rushes out to sea because you could never handle it. You don't get any water. What are you talking about?
I've heard that he can't read. I don't know if you guys have heard that before.
Well, no, I'm sure he can read.
Not can't read, but like he's terrible at reading stuff.
No, I think that's possible. I think a lot of people are bad at reading. I found the most brilliant article. It was actually Gord Laws who posted it over the weekend.
Mm.
I'm just going to read the first little bit of this for you. I can read. just a little bit, though. I mean, I don't want to get you too excited because I'm not the best reader in the world, and when I do, I often screw it up. But this is a great article. Are you illiterate? This article won't help. That's how it starts.
Okay. Mm.
Do you have a hard time reading? Don't worry, I do too. Was there supposed to be a comma or something in that last sentence? I have no clue. I'll be honest with you, I'm cranking this whole thing out on a voice-to-text app on my phone, so fingers crossed it doesn't duck up and make me look like an idiot. I don't know why I'm stressing, though. If you're illiterate and it's not like you have any idea what I'm saying, you only clicked on this article because of the picture, because there's a picture of this beautiful girl. All these words in a row are probably scaring you, so here's another picture to keep you here. And it goes on. And it's basically about how all you have to do is be hot on the internet these days. And the rest doesn't matter. Mm. ABC. Always be hot.
Mm. The ABC. Classic. It's a classic.
All right. So there we go.
Mm. Well, someone whose pictures are not going to make it onto the internet are the wedding photos from Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds.
Why?
They have been banned. Their photographs have been banned from Pinterest.
Mm.
The reason being, it's a whole new trend in America now to have your wedding at plantations.
Okay. What does that mean?
You know...
Cotton plantations.
Yeah, like plantations, if you think back to the slave days.
Oh, boy, all right.
And that's why Pinterest has banned any photos from plantation venues.
Oh, really?
I'm just like...
So you get married in some place because it's pretty, but because...
Like we do at wine farms in South Africa.
Because 200 years ago there were slaves there. Now you can't have your wedding there and can't go on the internet. Well, okay, that's a great reason for you to have your wedding there because then you won't have all these people putting up pictures. Fantastic. Now I know where I'm going to get married one day. Wherever there were the most slaves 200 years ago so that no one
exactly
would post my
going.
Pictures. Yeah. Someone find out which wine farm in South Africa had the most slaves back in 1800.
Mm.
Jesus, what a stupid
thing. Who had the most staunch dope system.
This is the most ridiculous political correctness taken to the nth degree. It's mad. It's absolutely mad.
And the other thing is that the wedding was back in 2012.
And
they've now taken these pictures off.
Can I just point out, this is Ryan Reynolds, who happens to be one of the funniest people in the world.
Mm.
And he's just put out like the most politically incorrect superhero movies with Deadpool. Who is it that is so desperate to point out other people's flaws that they've actually found a reason to have this banned on Pinterest? Because it couldn't have come from Pinterest themselves unless they are bored, shitless, and not making any money.
All this really popular website in America, The Knot, as in tying the knot, they started it by saying that they would prohibit any language that glorifies, celebrates, or romanticizes Southern plantation history. Hmm. Pinterest then went further and took steps to remove previously posted photos of plantation weddings.
Oh, what a lot of work for nothing. Good for you. I hope you feel really, really safe now. Now that you don't have Pinterest pictures of plantations, because God forbid, that would make someone so upset they wouldn't know how to handle it. Oh, how terrible for you. Can I just point out that this is a very scary story. They've issued a warning that there was this teetotal vegan non-smoker who bored themselves to death, and they just worried that this might have spread to other people. So if you're a teetotaling vegan non-smoker, just be warned. You might bore yourself to death and die too.
I've got two of those.
Oh,
I just mustn't. No, I mustn't become a vegan now.
No, if you become a vegan, you're finished.
Oh, vegans are terrible people.
Just a quick public service announcement there. On with the rest of the news.
It's so weird. I was just about to say a vegan influencer.
I know this story. Go on.
Eats meat for 30 days and shocks fans by saying that she's healthier than she's felt in years.
Wow.
Watch them pillory this poor person. Vegan influencer. I love that.
So she had been, she has 200,000 Instagram followers, mm-hmm. 700,000 YouTube subscribers. Mm-hmm. She explained in a post why she decided to try the carnivore diet after hearing about the health benefits from friends who'd switched from being vegan to eating only meat and animal products. She had her own fair share of health struggles. Eventually, she was at breaking point and was willing to try anything. And so she went straight onto all the eggs, all of the dairy, all of the meat.
Yes, all of it.
Like normal person.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
She stopped being a horrible person. That's why she feels better.
Well, it's interesting to me. Like, we've gone full circle from where people would post, I'm going totally vegan for 30 days. And then after 30 days, it's, I've never felt better. To a vegan saying they just ate meat, and after a little while, they've never felt better. So you just do whatever your system wants and stop making it about virtue points, please. I actually don't care about your diet at all.
Well, for her, it seemed bigger. It was her whole identity as a YouTuber. She said that this has just crumbled her vegan identity. But she's feeling absolutely amazing, so I guess she's going to carry on being full-on carnivore. She said she woke up after one day of feeling more mentally clear, focused, wholesome, and healthy than she'd felt in years.
After getting home really late on Saturday night and waking up yesterday morning hungry as hell, I ordered some takeaway, and it arrived. I've never been so excited about anything. I promise you, if I had received, I don't know, $100 billion in my bank account, I don't think I would have been as excited as I was to get food yesterday morning.
What did you char?
Oh, man. A toasted sandwich with chicken mayonnaise, avocado, and tomato. It was a feast.
All the things you like.
It was so nice. I felt like the richest guy in the world when that arrived. I promise you.
You felt whole.
Oh, man. It's the little things.
Damn it.
So McDonald's is bringing out a chicken sandwich, but it's the American type, so it's like a crumbed chicken, chicken pieces in a sandwich. Mm-hmm. They've rolled it out in Texas so far, I think one other state in America. And apparently this is going to be huge for their competition against Chick-fil-A, and Popeyes is here as well.
Well, also good, if we're talking about chicken, to remember that the holidays are here and the Metro Police are around. And if you have a chicken sandwich in your car, that usually can get you out of some fines. Uh-huh. It's a very good idea to keep a bag of chicken sandwiches, too.
A bag
really,
of Popeye.
Because, honestly, for the cost of the chicken, you could save yourself thousands in fines. Remember, the Metro Police exclusively eat chicken. So make sure that you have a bucket of KFC or a nice chicken burger from one of the other outlets. Make sure you sort it. Popeyes might be a good one too.
Well, just to translate for those who don't speak the lingo of the streets.
Chickenese.
When he comes up or she comes up to you and says, "Ngicela KFC, can I please a KFC?" Mm. What they mean is $100, just so you know. So, yeah, KFC.
So is that how you play it?
That's Ngicela KFC. Because then he can't be caught.
I should maybe like pass around the word KFC. Mm. just nonchalantly when I'm pulled over.
Or just be forthcoming and say, oh, you're hungry?
Yeah.
Here's $100. Go buy KFC.
No. You must have it with you.
Yeah, always.
Otherwise, because they'll smell it, and that does all the work for you. Metro police have an incredible sense of smell. They sometimes they say they can smell the alcohol on your breath, but they can really smell KFC. So if you have a bucket in your car, or even just a Streetwise 5. Yes, yes.
Streetwise 5.
Tell you
I was
something.
Eating a pie once when I got pulled over. and the cop said...
You were eating it as they pulled you over. You're munching into the pie. Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah?
And the cop said... Are you enjoying your pie? It crumbs all over my chest. he was like, well, enjoy it and carry on. Thank goodness. But all it was a late night pie, so you
can imagine. I'm very excited. Let's get John Felismus in here. I love having this dude around. He's always got interesting takes on just about everything. He's also, today, we're going to talk a little bit about something we haven't spoken about before. Because John is an MBA scholar at Henley Business School. And I think what's really interesting about this, he was awarded the Henley's Creative and Music Industries MBA Scholarship for his contribution to the arts and the creative industries. And it doesn't, we don't need an excuse to have him in here, but this seems like a good enough one. And I really think that for a lot of people, we have to think about what boxes they tick and what industries they've been in and what they do for a living. But with John, it seems like you just break the mold every time you try something new, and people don't know how to deal with that some of the time. So here it is, as part of a series of interviews, we're going to meet some of the people, the minds at Henley, and one of them is John Felismus. Henley Business School's Africa Connect alumni platform was launched in November 2019, and the opening event brought together some of the school's most prominent students and graduates. We found comedian John Felismus and asked him, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, who would you take on as a business partner, who would you employ, and which one would you kill?
So that's really easy. We all need to kill Elon Musk. I think he's the Antichrist. And his new cyber van can't even handle a hammer in the window. So that's the first thing. Hang on, that's wrong. Sorry. Yeah, I take that back. Let's kill Mark Zuckerberg. I think he's the Antichrist. Because the Antichrist is mild, right? He presents in chinos. Then I would work for George Bezos because he knows what he's doing. Whatever he does, he keeps making it bigger. I would start a business with Elon Musk because it's just for people who want to try a business for a while. It'll be really sexy. You'll do cool shit. You'll land rockets. You'll blow up cars. And then the next day the company will be gone. So you don't have to go to work on the Wednesday.
This is Meet the Mind, the series that gives you insight into some of South Africa's most interesting thinkers. Brought to you by Henley Business School. Yes, indeed. So no pressure. We're going to meet the mind this morning. We're not just going to talk nonsense with him. Man.
He's going to change his mind, though.
Yeah. Well, he did in that question. All right, but there's some unconventional thinking and there's some unconventional questions because business is not the way that it's always been.
Yeah.
Business has changed. Doing an MBA is not what it was once was. And a lot of people think in MBA, you know, they're dime a dozen and there's so many business schools that offer them. I mean, you're not the obvious candidate for this.
No.
Despite the fact that you have been a very successful business owner, and you've actually done quite a lot in business in terms of experience.
Yeah, I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't have any training.
Yeah.
And I realize that more and more as I meet people. They say, well, why are you doing this? Why don't you just go and carry on doing business? I don't think it's about that. I don't think it's particularly an MBA. It's learning. It's just learning, like learning how to learn. And so the MBA is quite a good one because you do a lot of different subject matter in a very short space of time. So you have to, it's a very concentrated, for someone who barely got out of high school, how to prepare assignments and like do actual referencing. And then realizing when you go to Briars in this country, how incredibly unqualified most people are. Like, most opinions are rubbish.
and we realized this morning, there was a story Leanne was telling me about this art show at Art Basel in New York.
Right.
Where they sold a banana duct taped to a piece of paper, and it sold for hundreds of thousands of dollars to some French art collector.
Now, right.
Don't tell me that rich people are all clever or that you need to be very clever to get rich.
Yeah.
It's not true. 100%.
I agree with you.
I've met some very, very smart people who are doing run-of-the-mill stuff.
Yeah.
And I've met some hugely wealthy people who are not necessarily smarter than any of us in the studio except Google.
Yeah, and oh. I think I think wealth makes you generationally more stupid because you, if you inherit it, you just automatically assume a lot of things about the world, and most of them are wrong.
So what? How did you get involved with Henley, just so we can be clear about this?
So, I mean, ultimately, years and years and years ago, I went to a lunch, and like long ago, 10, 12 years, and the lunch was with John Foster Pedley. Who's right. now the dean of Henley, and John and I just connected in a way that suddenly I found this kind of academic who wasn't an academic, he was an unacademic.
Right.
And he almost like, I could watch him kind of watching me across the table as if like, here's a project. This guy like seems to be interested in learning but not interested. Like it was the weirdest, like I changed my mind, right? So he, in a very subtle way, got me interested in learning by just being very, very cool to me about, like, challenging me on an academic basis. And it was a long-term project because he basically said, I want you to come to Cape Town and talk to my students at the GBS, MBA students who were doing stuff. So what happened then was, one of the days, I didn't know this, but somebody in the audience, one of the students at one of my talks, was doing an MBA and then would go on to do her PhD, and she now heads up the school of sort of innovation and creativity for entrepreneurs at Henley.
Wow.
Puleng, who's become a real another mentor to me, and we are diametrically opposed. I mean, she's a deeply charismatically religious woman, mm-hmm. And I am not.
You're the other one.
I don't want to like. I just don't identify as that, right? So.
For now,
yeah, I could change. We don't know, and I may end up marrying Jeff Bezos. We don't know, and so.
As a deeply charismatic,
do you know what I mean?
Religious
yeah.
woman,
I could bring him God, and so it just became this thing where, and what's happened over the years is, I now not only study at Henley, but I'm teaching there, and
it's amazing.
So it's become this kind of hub for. I almost want to say that there's a place for weirdos in the business world, and it's at Henley.
There's
so
not just
cool.
a place. I think everybody in the business world is looking for weirdos. They're looking for, I mean, these buzzwords of creativity and diversity of talent and skills and street smarts and all of the... You know, people throw this lingo around.
Yes.
But in reality, there are very few who actually break the mold and are able to teach others.
Yeah.
Very few. It's interesting to me, too, just from the point of view that, I mean, I've known you were smart long before you did an MBA. And I think a lot of people know that because I've always regarded most comedians as being particularly smart people. They observe. They're right. very, very sharp. They then translate their observations into real-world commentary.
Right.
Which sometimes has a shelf life that's absolutely extraordinary. I mean, like it outlasts movies
that are
iconic and that kind of thing. But... You and I have spoken about intelligence before because I think it's something that interests both of us.
Yeah.
How do you measure it? What are you actually looking for? What makes a person useful and intelligent?
Yeah.
And how much intelligence is about what you learn and how much of it is about how you learn?
Yes.
And this is what I'm curious about this morning and why we wanted to talk to you today especially. Because, I mean, you know, it's never – like I said, we don't need an excuse to get you in here. But when you watch some of the people who are studying at Henley, for example, or just smart people you've met.
Right.
How do you think they think
yeah.
matters in relation to what they know? Because what you know is something anybody could pick up. Now, Google's available everywhere.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not hard to find the material.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately what I've... So there are a couple of things. The one is that I think I gravitate towards people who appreciate complexity as opposed to trying to oversimplify everything. Because, you know, there are quadrants of people. And you know, when you become a customer, you eat simplicity. Like, that's what you do, right? That's your kind of job, is to be highly opinionated, very lazy, and just consume. Because that's what markets like to feed you, is to find out your opinion and then just give you what you want without you having to leave the couch.
And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because once you get into that system, you start believing your own bullshit as well.
Absolutely, exactly. So you form these heuristics, and then you find these sort of like mobs that you join, and so there are those people. And whether it's my own life, like sort of eating properly, exercising, which I hate, but I do it, because it's kind of a regimen that keeps you kind of it's reflected in the way that you use your brain. So I find the people who appreciate complexity, those who are not polarized, those those who like to understand that there are many, many, constant values that may differ that are equally valid at the same time. And so if you talk to the Maverick journalists or you hang out with, you do this really well. Like you, and I think it's your appreciation for what, perhaps we call intelligence, but it's complexity because we're just apes and we're really good at patterns. That's if you boil it right down. So some apes are better at patterns, and what we do is we look at lots of patterns and we distill it into a simpler pattern for people to understand. I think that's what good teaching is.
Well, this is interesting too, because I heard the best explanation the other day for why the market, the free market, is actually the greatest invention in human history.
Right.
The free market, and anyone who's involved in business or studying business or anything to do with business, when it wants to make money, and who doesn't, frankly?
Yeah.
Those people need to acknowledge that the free market is a machine that everybody is unconsciously contributing to determine the price of things.
Yeah.
And if you've got, how many people are there now on Earth? 7 billion or 8 billion?
It's
over 7 billion people who are, without even being aware of it, contributing to that free market. And it's been going for years. It went before the internet. It was already working.
Sure.
If you look at an article that you buy on a shelf in a shop,
right,
you go, this thing's worth R5, but I'm only prepared to pay R3 for it.
Yes.
They're going to have to at some point drop the price if enough people say R5's too expensive.
Yeah.
And it finds its own level. And no government coercion is necessary or Soviet Politburo commissions who have to determine what the price of an apple is.
Yes.
And they did.
They can try.
they used to have this, right? Yeah. They actually used to have committees that would say the price of wheat is X. The price of a raspberry pie is X. They had to decide this stuff.
The price of a banana duct taped to a paper is
$120,000.
Like, the market will allow for aberrations, but it will mostly keep everything within a certain band. Otherwise, the stuff won't sell.
Yeah.
And that's an incredible machine.
Yeah. And so even the art world is governed by a very small group of irrational human beings. That's what art collectors are. They are way too passionate about what they collect for it to be real. So this is why art is it's exactly the same thing.
And when you talk about people being pattern-seeking apes, which is what we are, sometimes those patterns are not easily decipherable.
Absolutely.
And then we sit there and we go, because we don't understand. And a lot of politics and a lot of what we see on the internet now, thanks to this massive research business that everybody is a part of, you can go online and you can ask a question and you can get pilloried or you can get threatened or you can get hate speech or whatever it is.
Yes.
We can suddenly tap into the general irrationality of humanity. Or, if you're lucky, hit a strain of real gold where people can help you figure something out.
Yeah, you can actually tap into like a collective intelligence, which is fantastic.
And that was never really available before. No. Not to the ordinary man on the street.
Well, this is why old people are not my favorite, because they didn't have all the tools. And, I had this conversation with my mum last night, actually. She's 73 and is insisting that the past is better. And so many, so much data will tell you that for example, if you say that you're all about family values, which were better in the old days, okay, that's a lie. You were actually for a generation that was harder on young people, died sooner, they were awful.
Well, it wasn't called rape just because it was marriage.
Exactly.
I mean, let's be fair about this.
Bingo.
You think men behave badly today? You have no idea. Like in the Middle Ages?
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, so don't tell me about the old days. They were
values.
Awful.
Yeah. Good Christian values. Once upon a time in your imagination.
Apartheid. End of conversation. Thank you. Yeah.
Slavery. Let's keep looking. I heard the most interesting thing the other day, which comes from a UN, and the UN is not the most left of center, the most right of center organization you'll ever encounter. They discovered, upon mining the data, which is someone else's buzzword.
Right, of course,
Mine that data, big Mind. Data. So they've been looking at all the results of various surveys conducted all over the world. And the UN is quite good and methodical about this stuff. You know that world poverty was halved between 2000 and 2012? Halved.
Yeah.
World poverty was halved.
Yes.
They reckon that the chances are by 2030 there will be no one living below today's minimum wage by 2030.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, of course, that doesn't mean everybody's going to be hugely successful and there's going to be an enormous glut of everything.
Yes, everyone will be at the mall together. Yeah. Yeah.
But there will be a general reduction in the misery of abject poverty. and to a degree that humanity just could never have predicted. We always thought that the cake was only so big and that there were more and more people, and so we would all get less and less of it. Turns out that abundance is actually something we can make.
Yeah.
And abundance is something which is attainable. And somehow this is all coming through now in the numbers.
Yeah.
There's a tremendously... I mean, you could be happy about being alive now, or you could be ecstatic. Anything less is actually just ungrateful.
100%. I don't know if you've read Hans Rosling's book, Factfulness.
No, tell me more.
It's all of the latest data.
Right.
And it changes the conversation at the Briar. I can't go to Briars anymore because all of the assumptions are wrong. You know, the rich are getting rich, therefore the poor must be getting poorer. Well, that's a stupid thing to say. They're not necessarily linked. Yes, there are a small number of rich people who are very, very rich. I understand that. But the poor, as you've just said, are no longer as poor as they were.
But it's usually people, and correct me if I'm wrong, usually people who are just resentful and bitter that they're not as rich as the rich people who talk about how wealth is a problem.
Yes.
Wealth, what it does, and people have to remember this too, this is about business. Someone will invent a product, and you remember those big TVs?
Yes.
Remember those ones that took up, like, some people would buy them. They were thick, first of all.
Yes,
it was almost like a projector from behind.
It was a rear projection TV.
Right, but they were huge. They were they were really, really enormous.
It gave your family leukemia as they watched them. Yeah.
But they cost hundreds of thousands of rand.
Yes.
And there were people rich enough to buy them.
Yep.
And enough of those people bought them for the manufacturers to work out a better kind of technology, sell those things profitably, make enough money, put it back into research and development.
Thin it down.
And come out with those thin screen TVs that now look like a picture frame on your wall and give you much better quality pictures. Now, if the rich people of the 1980s and 90s who bought those shitty things hadn't spent those hundreds of thousands of rands, we wouldn't have been able to develop the newer kinds of TVs, which we can all afford now.
We all enjoy, even the ones that wrap towards you now.
And on Black Fridays,
I mean,
look at how everybody, even poor people, go and buy these TVs.
Yeah, you can elbow someone in the face and get your own one. I mean,
you've got to get one for New Year so you can throw it out the window.
But this is the marvel of modern technology, of the market, the free market, and the fact that rich people do us all a lot of good by pissing away their money first.
Absolutely. Blow it up. Yeah. High margins.
Yeah.
R&D. I mean,
and God knows the smart drugs they aren't going to figure out based on really, really dumb rich people needing to stay smart or to get smarter.
Or stay alive longer.
Do you do any supplements or any of that stuff? You just said just now to keep your brain going. You need to do exercise even though you hate it.
Yes.
You need to eat right.
Yeah.
But do you do anything else?
No, not really. I've read like quite a lot of Ben Goldacre. He's a great doctor who writes from the UK about, you know, the real truth about stuff. And the truth is there are very few clinical trials on any of these things. It's a very big market called nutraceuticals.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant because it means you can sell people stuff without any certification. It's like a dietitian. They have no qualification whatsoever.
I know people who do... you know, these supposed smart drugs, and some of them are just because they have ADHD.
Do you mean like Adderall? Or
Adderall, I mean things like Concerta, Modafinil, Adderall, what's the other one? Provigil.
Is Lyrica one? I don't know if
I don't know about Lyrica, but I'm paying attention to this stuff because there might be something in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just so terrified that I might be dumber than I could. I might be smarter than I could be if I just discovered some unbelievable material, or I read something that changed my outlook. Or you don't do.
I know that they're all quite stimulants. I mean, I did try cocaine for a very long time.
For a long time.
Yeah, I did, and it was really unsuccessful. I thought I was doing really well. Like I thought my conversation was blistering. I thought it was genius.
And it didn't addle you.
No. Well, you know, It really, I think Bill Cosby, controversially, was once quoted as saying, you know, why do you take cocaine? Is it, well, it amplifies my personality. And he's like, well, what happens if you're an asshole? You know,
That's exactly right. Did you find it was difficult to just leave that sort of life behind?
Yeah. Look, it did take quite a long stay in a very special hotel with fairly specialized security.
Cost a lot of money too.
Yeah, but I'm glad I went through it, and I think it was a fire that was quite tempering. It's quite a good. I think it was Blake who said that excess leads to wisdom. It's a brilliant thing to be a junkie because you become a master planner and you develop fairly serious resilience. But you also see the world. I met a lot of really famous executives in the underbelly. You know, and just because I didn't have chinos.
Well, in cities like New York, they say the entire economy is actually powered by people on Adderall and right. cocaine and all these
it
things.
It seems to be, I mean, maybe that's the future, is the sort of synthesis of human and chemical. I don't know.
If we can find a way for it to first do no harm, then maybe.
That would be amazing.
I was actually diagnosed with ADHD.
Oh, I thought diagnosed with cocaine.
I was going to say, who's your doctor?
I've got a 6-month repeat prescription. and I was put on Concerta, and I lasted a week. The anxiety that it created was immense. Someone breathe, I wanted to punch their face in.
Yeah.
Wow. It was extreme.
It made you aggressive.
I don't know how people actually survive on it for such
long periods. Did I know you at
periods.
That time?
No, it was very recently.
Well, I did know you, but we
were
you weren't known.
You weren't assaulted, were you, at any point?
No. You've known me all along.
She stayed away from me. Lucky me.
But it was literally a week. It was while my mum was in hospital.
Okay.
And that may not have had anything to do with your feeling otherwise, perhaps.
It all added together. But I don't know how people survive on this stuff for years.
We're going down another path here, and we can maybe pick this up later. But, John, before we run out of time, The performing John Flissmas is still a thing. You still occasionally will do this, but it's almost as if you've evolved into another kind of creature. You know, it used to be your whole life to be up on stage, making people laugh, doing these really edgy things. It's interesting that in some ways this is the John Flissmas that the old one would have hated.
Yeah, 100%.
And so maybe now the new John Flissmas looks down on the old one.
Yeah, In fact, I do. I feel a bit. I feel like my previous work was very destructive, and because ultimately what happens is, back to my thing that people are stupid. I really mean that, and it's not a judgment call. It's a call to, like, come on, dudes. You've got privilege. You've got access to information. Why are you still saying the same old rubbish? And I think comics do that. You know, we tend to find the lowest common denominator, and we play to that. And I've got old YouTube clips of my own that I'm really ashamed of. Actually, it's just nothing more than, like, racial stereotypes dressed up as jokes. So I guess I do look down a little bit on it, but it was good training for where I want to go now. And I mean, I did lots of good stuff. I mean, I think, but for me, I'm a bit of an extremist. I have to switch off that tap before I can really commit to this. So you won't find me in a comedy club. I won't do a corporate booking for comedy. I've left the management company. I've sold my shares in that. Like, I've literally switched off that tap.
It's amazing. A lot of people would have said, but that's a great income stream. If you're
it
NBA,
really
you
is.
Shut down that income stream. What an idiot you are!
Yeah, exactly. So I have a new, set of stuff which actually launched today, and so my website went live today. So johnflissmas.com is finally up and running.
It's all right.
And
it's gonna have
and
a look.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff there which is really cool, and I have already started doing stuff. I teach a lot at Henley. I'm there quite often. In fact, I'm going there now to do a workshop for my next subject.
I think you are excited by being around really, really smart people, and it's almost like you get access to your own personalized university here. You get to meet the people who are talking about the things you're most interested in, and you get to spend time with them, and you get to relay those impressive thoughts onto other young, inquiring, curious minds.
Yeah.
And that turns you on way more than getting applause.
Yeah, it's a campus where I can, you know, I can,
brilliant.
Things can happen. And
this is fantastic. And I feel sorry for the other comedians. Not that I've grouped you with them, but
sure.
Socrates, this is it's maybe apocryphal, who knows, but Socrates used to leave his lectures if they applauded. He used to actually walk out because he considered that at that point, their reptile brain kicked in and they were enjoying it too much instead of thinking.
Yeah, I always had that line. If you clap, I'm leaving because I will not be approved of. I don't want your approval.
That's a tremendous position to take from so far away, the start of any comic's career, when your purpose is to get the laughter.
100%.
And then towards the end where you actually eschew it.
Yeah.
You don't want it.
No, I don't want it. Like, you know, listen, learn. I mean, the lectures can be funny. We have a lot of, I have a lot of, you know, comedy in the lectures. But I have to get to a point in the day.
You're a funny guy. You're not going to be able to switch that off.
Yeah. And that's a cool human, you know, why would you live without humor? But I use that quite a lot. So I work with, like, a lot of executives. And It was funny, the other day I worked with a group of 10 people, and within about 12 minutes, they were, six of them were crying. And so I was like, wow.
What did you do?
This really has, well, the truth is, it's a lot easier to make bankers cry today than it is to make them laugh.
Did you at any stage, and this is a difficult thing to admit maybe, but I've felt like this. Did you ever have imposter syndrome where you were sitting in a lecture hall and you were like, what the hell am I doing talking about this?
Dude, I have it all the time. And my last show in Cape Town at the Grand West Arena as a comic after 25 years, I had the same twinge as I walked on stage going, I think I've been bullshitting everyone.
So
multiply that by 10 with this new path, because I was in Germany doing a masterclass for a bunch of people in Munich and with Henley Global. And I had the guy cleaning up the venue, like he was doing the cups and putting out the chairs, had a PhD. I'm still finishing my MBA, so I still have a way to go before I get to a DBA. And I felt so like I shouldn't be here. And yet, I had a lecture spot in this 2-day period. I hosted it, but I had a lecture spot. And I kept, just before me, there was a guy from a robotics company in somewhere really sexy in San Francisco or something. And I thought, like, I don't have any, I have nothing to offer here.
That's
anyway,
so bizarre, because people like me look at you and we see you so comfortable on stage. You're so good at dealing with an audience, whether it's in intelligent ways or in funny ways or both. And I would imagine you go up there with the best feeling in the world. You're like, I'm going to wipe the floor with these business fuckers. And yet, here it is. Like, you're admitting there's this imposter syndrome that comes in. What do you talk to people about? Because you've been in Singapore, you've been in Germany, you've been all over the world doing this stuff.
Mm.
It must be very fulfilling, but what exactly is it you're telling people?
So we look at what's happening in that business region, and we sort of Barry Funsale and I do this. So Barry's, I mean, you know, was one of the country's best drummers, but
right.
he finished his MBA.
Barry used to be in Johnny Clegg's band.
That's correct. Yeah. So Barry's got a job now developing new business for Henley globally, and
it's amazing.
So we look at what's going on
these
in that region.
These creative people who are going into business,
yeah. So we kind of survey that region and we find out what they want to talk about. So in Munich, it was all about. The general theme for us is always championing humanity. So whatever technology is going on, we look at the human aspect, and that's kind of, we want to enhance humans so that when they get into the sort of integrated with technology, that we bring the very best of human thinking into the kind of machine learning. So in Germany, it was called augmented leadership. So we spoke about how you would be a better leader with tech rather than against it, or, you know, as opposed to it. When we were in Nigeria, we spoke about the side hustle, because that's a very real thing in a lot of employment situations. We're going to Trinidad in, I think, February. There, we're talking about distributed leadership. So it's, you know, how you break up leadership into various pieces, and then you allow your team and technology to kind of run this platform of leadership. So, and there's, you know, you run a feedback loop so that the machine learning is improving the human leadership qualities all the time. So it just depends on what the need of the, let's call it, the client country is.
And for you, then, it's also good because it's constantly stimulating, and you're not going to get bored doing the same course.
Again. Well, you know, I'm sure you've seen millions of business speakers who just download stuff from the internet and they slash together a deck and then kind of present the same crap for a long time.
Horrible.
It's often outdated. And with machine learning, you've really got to be updating all the time. Like, you've quoted some heuristics that most people don't even know about poor people. So we kind of try and feed that in all the time. You know, and then I do it here in the classroom. So I teach South African executives why most of what they believe is wrong, because they inherited from old apes who didn't know.
Yeah, and those patterns may be broken.
100%. Break patterns all the time.
Right, and I think that there's an appetite for really interesting aha moments.
Yeah.
That I'm sure your lectures would provide, because you're coming at it from somewhere that they don't understand.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, just explaining to a South African man, that if you took away his gender, like right now, would it affect his life? And you've destroyed him, but there's no change.
Yeah, that's the most bizarre
thing.
It's
such a simple concept, because then you can go into maleness, femaleness, you know, neutrality. You can go into blackness, whiteness, gayness, straightness. It doesn't matter. Any binary now becomes a fluid continuum. And just that makes you more intelligent. And you can get that done in a day, but they've got to be willing. But you've got to break down some. So that's why bankers cry.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that you're making bankers cry. That is a huge achievement.
That's getting one back for the good guys.
Exactly. All right. Well, it's terrific to actually to mine some really interesting information out of you for a change, instead of us just talking nonsense about what's going on in the world. But I'm sure that this is for a number of people who are looking for the next evolution in their own business, in their own career, in their own life. Keep learning, right?
Absolutely.
The mark of someone intelligent actually is how much they want to know, not how much they know.
That is exactly right.
Very nice. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me, guys.
The website is live, johnflismus.com. You can go and have a look at that, and you can get in to all of the stuff that John's been talking about here. There's also going to be a series of these for you to listen to, a podcast series on Henley Business School and some of the more interesting people that we've – and believe me, there are a ton of them, but we've managed to find just a few who we think might open up your eyes and your mind to a world of learning that you may not have considered up to now. John Flismus, our guest for this morning, and we will see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock, bright and early. Meet the Mind, brought to you by Henley Business School, only on cliffcentral.com. Transferring money electronically is part of our everyday lives, and traditional banks have made it almost as simple as making a phone call. But there's a lot going on in the background, which often means delays and charges. We're at Luno headquarters in Cape Town to chat to Luno's country manager for France and Italy, Maria Vansisch, about how cryptocurrencies are revolutionizing the way we move money.
So we often talk about Bitcoin as an investment, a store of value, but the benefits of Bitcoin as a payment system give it the true potential to disrupt and democratize the existing financial system. So a lot of people ask what we can really do with our Bitcoin. Well, if you transfer money between two different accounts at the same bank, there are very few pain points, and it's actually quite simple. But it gets a little bit more complicated when you want to transfer money from one bank to a different bank. Well, the two banks might have different ledger systems and that need to be reconciled. And for this, they charge a fee and often takes more time to complete the transfer. So when there are banks or other financial systems in foreign countries, it gets even more complicated. There are different languages, systems, currencies, more parties to coordinate and so on. So the fees and transfer times increase. And that's why the financial system is so complex. It's just a massive entanglement of various ledger systems around the world. And Bitcoin has a true opportunity to change this. It's simply one global ledger system that synchronizes across the entire internet so that everyone can access the same ledger account in real time, no matter who or where they are. This means that money can easily be transferred between parties without all the lag times and exorbitant fees, just like it used to be before it became a little bit too complicated. People can use Bitcoin as payment system for everything that one would do with normal money. They can send to friends and family locally or abroad. They can buy things online, get paid for their work, and so on. Microsoft has been accepting Bitcoin for use in its online Xbox store since 2014, and South Africa's companies more often accept Bitcoin as a payment. An example would be an e-commerce company called Bid or Buy. Once you have cryptocurrency in your Luno wallet, you can easily send it to others. Sending Bitcoin to someone with a Luno wallet using their email address or mobile number makes the transaction instant and free. There are three ways to do it. Using your Luno wallet, you can send to a wallet address, you can send to someone's email address or mobile number, or you can scan a QR code in your friend's Luno app, similar to how you would pay using SnapScan or Zapper.
Decrypto is everything you need to know about buying, trading, and spending cryptocurrency. Brought to you by Luno. Only on cliffcentral.com. Cliffcentral.com.